May it please the Court, good morning, Your Honors. Robert Bestie of Smith, Katzenstein, and Jenkins here on behalf of the appellant and the plaintiff below, Syeda Scott. Your Honors, plaintiff believes that this matter is governed by fundamental principles of Delaware law governing the rights and duties of property owners. It is our position that those fundamental principles dictate, in this particular case under the contract at issue, that both Target and Acadia have concurrent liability for the condition of the land at issue, the Target primary parking area. Now, that concurrent liability is in a vacuum. We can't bring suit against Target because of the workers' comp ban, but in a vacuum, we believe they have concurrent liability for the condition of the land. In order to get there, you first must back up to the beginning of this relationship. Before the contract at issue, Acadia owned the town center in fee simple absolute. That gives Acadia unfettered discretion with respect to the use, possession, and disposition of that land. That is the natural state for the contract at issue, which is a lengthy and somewhat complicated contract. Delaware law mandates that those rights as the property owner include the right to possession and control. And again, that's the natural state. And as the landowner, Acadia is charged with potential liability for the condition of that land when it's open to business invitees such as Ms. Scott, and I don't believe there's any question that she is a business invitee in this case. Delaware law does recognize an explicit exception to the liability of a landowner. There are several, but here the most important one is the non-possessory landowner exception to landowner liability, also sometimes referred to as the out-of-possession landowner. Under this exception, it is critical that the landowner show it surrendered both possession and control to another entity or individual in order to eliminate its liability as a landowner under Delaware law. Under the contract at issue between the parties and the facts of this case, such a finding is not possible.
Well, Mr. Bestie, what did the Superior Court, was the Superior Court, was it not?
It was, Your Honor.
Hold, and why is its holding legally incorrect?
The Superior Court's holding on the issue of possession is legally incorrect because Acadia never surrendered possession of the Target primary parking area or any of the parking area or any of the common areas of the town center to Target. And unless that happens, the non-possessory landowner exception to landowner liability cannot apply.
Are you talking about surrendering the right to possess or surrendering actual possession?
Well, in this context, I believe that they are the same. I think that Acadia retained both actual and contractual possession of the Target primary parking area at issue.
That may be, but which of these two legal categories is pivotal for purposes of the legal principle you're relying on?
As a first instance, possession is critical.
Actual possession.
Actual possession, which includes possession under the contract between the parties. Our position is that as the landowner, Acadia must show that it surrendered possession of the property in question, the parking area, to Target, and that it is unable to do so under the contracted issue and the facts.
Can you give us an example of what Acadia could do with the parking lot without Target's permission? Just one example.
Of something that it can do without Target's permission. One thing it can do is it can cordon off portions of the area to prevent prescriptive easement rights. There are
that
other
rights.
That
would be from third parties, so that would be putting something on the perimeter of the property.
Well, I think that the prescriptive easement rights include entering the property and taking outright possession and physical possession of the property to prevent prescriptive easements. Many of the rights that Acadia has are subject to Target's approval. But that we believe that's a natural.
Well, I'm asking you to give me just one example of one that's not. I mean, putting up a barrier on the perimeter of the property for 20 years to prevent a prescriptive easement it doesn't seem to have anything to do with what's going on within the parking lot. You certainly, because they certainly couldn't keep Target and its invitees out of the parking lot. So putting aside that example, I'd like you to give me another example or a different example of what Acadia could do in this case without Target's permission.
Well, I think Acadia does have the right under the contract to exclude people who are not permittees from the common areas and the Target primary parking area.
So if Target invites somebody in, you're saying Acadia could overrule that?
No, that's not what I'm saying, because Acadia gave Target permission to allow its licensees or designees onto the property under the lease. With someone who does not qualify as one of Target's permittees under the lease, Acadia could exclude themselves.
Okay. Who was responsible under the lease for maintaining the parking area, you know, that pertained to Target?
Under the lease, Target agreed to maintain that area, and that included the obligation to remove ice and snow.
And who was responsible for maintaining, in effect, insurance, liability insurance, with respect to those premises?
Target was also required to maintain liability insurance with respect to the parking area at issue. And that gets to the secondary question, Your Honor, of control. Our first possession is that they do not qualify as a non-possessory landowner, and under that circumstance, if the court agrees, they continue to be concurrently liable. Now, even if the court thinks that they are a non-possessory landowner, the question of whether Acadia exerted control over the Target primary parking area goes to Your Honor's question. And that, we believe, is a fact question that the jury should have determined.
Well, in its opinion, the Superior Court says twice that everyone agreed there were no factual disputes. And it's always surprising to us on appeal to have the court write an opinion that says the parties agree this is appropriate for summary judgment, there are no factual disputes, and then on appeal see an argument that there really is a factual dispute. Were those at least two statements in the Superior Court's opinion incorrect?
Unfortunately, Your Honor, my position is that they were absolutely incorrect. We argued in front of the Superior Court that as a matter of law, Target did not surrender possession of the area to Target, and that under the contract and the facts, you know, the facts at issue, the court could determine that as a matter of law. Alternatively, I argued, as I'm arguing in this court, that the question of control is a fact question that the court must submit to the jury.
Well, before you submit anything to the jury, you have to have some disputed facts. So tell me, what is a disputed fact?
Whether Acadia continues to control the Target primary parking
area. That's a conclusion of law. What facts related to that are in dispute?
Well, this is where it gets a little sticky, Your Honor, because in large part, the facts are not in dispute. What is in dispute is the result of those facts under Delaware law.
Fine. Well, that's a legal question, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, a jury doesn't decide whether these facts constitute control or not, do they?
Your Honor, yes. I think that under Delaware law, the jury would decide that. And, for example, this court's holding in Volkswagen mandated that the jury in that case decide the issue of possession. And that was, the facts were largely undisputed in that everybody agreed what happened, but it was the result and the legal impact of those facts that needed to be determined by the jury.
Well, what facts are there that you say would indicate that Acadia had control?
Well, I think that the court should start with the notion that they own the property. They never ceded possession of the property to Target, and that gives them, as the property owner, the right to control. They gave up specific rights to control to Target in the contract, but Delaware law allows two parties to be in control of an area. And with respect to the Target primary parking area, the facts do not support the legal conclusion that Acadia surrendered control absolutely to Target. the facts, we believe, support the conclusion and would support a jury verdict that Acadia maintained control, at least jointly, with Target under the terms of the lease and the facts.
And what did Acadia ever do to demonstrate that?
There are a few examples that we cite in our brief that talk about some landscaping problems. They generally testified that they would report any problems to Target. Granted, there are a few examples of in the record of tangible control where Acadia went into the Target primary parking area and said, fix this or fix that. There are very few. But under this court's precedent and the precedent from the Superior Court, courts very commonly look to the contractual rights between the parties to determine which party has control. And the juries do as well. So regardless of whether you get to the actual control test or the right to control test, which we go back and forth about which applies, courts do look and juries do look at the contract. And this contract gives Acadia the right to control at least jointly.
Mr. Bestie, what, in your view, what rights would Acadia have to give up in order to be deemed not in possession or control of the affected property?
The only two ways that I'm aware that can be done under Delaware law is through a lease, which is a formal surrender of possession or control. That is most of the non-possessory landowner cases that are discussed in the brief, which we contend do not apply. The only other example is the Volkswagen case, where Volkswagen gave to Transworld a license to occupy the property. And the license to occupy is a transfer of possession.
Well, what do we have here?
We have here a transfer of possession of the premises, which is only Target's big box store and not anything else. You have to look at this as it's a vibrant, large commercial facility.
Well, we're talking now about the parking area. Wasn't there, the lease may not have used any magic words, but wasn't it clear? Wasn't the clear import of the lease that the control and the right to determine who would park in those parking spaces would be Target?
I agree with Your Honor to the extent that the lease gave Target some right to control the Target primary parking area. But the lease does not give Target possession of that area. And, in fact, it specifically excludes it. It excludes the Target primary parking area and all parking areas from the definition of the premises. And the formal demise of the possessory interest to Target included only the premises. And the lease clearly says it only applies to the outside facade of the building and within. And it excludes all other areas, including the Target primary parking area.
But doesn't the lease forbid Acadia from making changes or modification to the parking area without tenant's prior written consent at tenant's sole and absolute discretion?
It does. It does.
And doesn't that sound a lot like the tenant is the one that is, Target is the one who has control over this parking area?
There are two ways of looking at that, Your Honor.
Okay.
The other way of looking at it is, why would the parties make that right explicit if Target possessed the land? If Target possessed the land, it would have the right to do that.
As you point out, the lease describes the premises as being the building, right?
That is correct.
So wouldn't it then require some additional language, such as what I just quoted to you, to make it clear that as to the parking area, although it is not leased as such to Target, Target has control over it?
Your Honor, again, I agree that the lease gives Target some control. But in order for the non-possessory landowner exception to apply, the lease must cede possession.
Okay,
explicitly.
So possession is the critical concept here?
That is our primary argument, Justice Jacobs.
Let's assume you're right, and that, let's assume counterfactually that the lease surrendered possession as well as control of the affected parking area, that is, the parking area around the Target store. How would the rights, you know, in the real world of the parties be any different? What would change other than the language of the lease?
If there was a formal
yes.
Transfer of control?
Of that area, yes.
Well, first off, I do think it should be considered in conjunction with possession, because I think they go together. But it would give Target uncontrolled and unrestricted rights to do what it pleases in that area. It would transfer.
But it has that right, subject only to the right of the landlord, Acadia, to police Target's observance of those duties. Isn't that correct?
I think the lease goes beyond that. I think the lease gives Acadia the right to do things like alter improvements, alter utility lines. Now, all of those rights are subject to Target's approval, but it just makes commercial sense that they would be. This is the parking lot fronting Target store, and it makes sense that they would be given the right to consent to changes in that area by the landlord, by the landowner, during the term of the contract.
Would you like to save your remaining time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs. May it please the Court, my name is Arthur Kuhl. I represent the defendants below, appellees, Acadia Realty. I think I'd like to start as a threshold matter to point out that the lease that we're talking about is a lease. It's a 94-page document. From counsel's arguments, I don't want to leave the impression that I'm agreeing that the lease and the agreements regarding the Target property stopped at the second page where the language about a demise of the premises is contained. The lease goes on with some 20 articles outlining the incomplete agreement between the parties. The same article that sets forth the definition of the premise or the premises to limit it only to the actual structure of the box goes on and has many other definitions outlining exactly what the parties were agreeing to. Specifically, they outline what is the landlord site, and that's everything other than the Target store and the Target box, the Target primary parking area. They outline what the tenant's site is. The tenant's site is the parking area that is designated along with the store. There's no dispute that the incident that gave rise to all this happened in the parking lot.
Mr. Kuhl, I assume that there's some commercial reason that the lease was structured this way conceptually. Could you enlighten us on that?
I assume there was, too. I'm not a commercial lease attorney. I have no idea what was the thoughts back some almost 20 years ago when this may have been drafted. My best assessment is that since this Target store, this box, does not sit directly on top of the ground, because there's language that sits basically on top of a Dick's Sporting Goods store, and that there's language that the landlord has to maintain the support structure or whatever the language was, that's my best assessment as to why it had to be structured out, since this is generally termed as a ground lease. Where this store is does not sit on the ground.
Well, it doesn't sit on stilts. I mean,
it sits on top of a Dick's Sporting Goods store. It's the second floor.
I see.
So that's.
Are you talking about Brandywine Town Center?
Yes.
And you're saying that Target is on top of another store?
And it's around the back and underneath is where the Dick's Sporting Goods store is, and there's some language, I don't have it handy, about the underground support structures down to the footings and that sort of thing. So it's the entire footprint of the store, of the box store of Target, going straight down, does not land immediately upon the earth or upon the ground. It goes through the Dick's Sporting Goods store. So that's my only assessment as to why there had to be some sort of separation between to identify basically the second level or that box store as opposed to the ground outside. However, it made it, I think, crystal clear in the lease, as you go through the articles, that it was transferring and leasing to Target that Target primary parking area. The rest of the articles in the lease do nothing except support that. Article 5 requires Target to pay taxes on the parking lot, and if the parking lot and box have separate tax bills from the rest of the shopping center, they are to pay that directly to the taxing authority. Then there's a lot of other language that if it's not separated out, it has to be apportioned and so forth.
Can I interrupt you? Because if we leave the language of the lease aside for a moment, is it not correct that for some period of time Acadia was maintaining the Target parking lot?
Acadia had hired
okay. A
contractor that did the site in general,
including the Target parking.
And Target continued on for some period of time using that contractor.
Well, okay, let me make sure I understand this. You're saying that Acadia selected a maintenance contractor.
Correct.
For the entire shopping center.
Correct.
And that for some period of time, Target also contracted with the same company to cover Target's parking area.
Correct. They used that same company, and they paid their apportionment of...
Okay, so it's not that Acadia paid for and hired the person or the company to handle
correct.
Target's parking area. It was just more or
correct.
Less a coincidence that Target selected the same company that the owner had selected.
I don't know if they actually selected it or agreed to it or however it worked, and I don't think there's anything in the record exactly the line of the cash flow, but the end result was Target was responsible in the end for paying for their portion of the snow removal of the overall contractor, at least until August of 2003. When they notified that contractor, they did not want to use them any longer.
So from the inception, Target could have made its own arrangements.
Correct.
It had simply said to Acadia, you've got this person doing the rest, we'll have them do ours too.
Correct. That's.
And then in 2003, they said, we're going to make separate arrangements and get a different person for whatever reason.
Correct. And that was prompted the letter that's part of the record from Acadia to Target, reminding them of their lease obligations, and that you know their contractor would no longer be doing Target's parking lot, and reminding them of their lease obligations. Which I want to make one point shortly. There is there some comments that and evidence that occasionally Acadia would notify Target if there was I think a landscaping issue at one point after this incident, notify them if there was some other issue. But that's not taking control. That's Acadia reminding Target of their lease obligations. This is not a situation where Acadia notices something that it doesn't like or think Target did wrong or incorrectly, steps in with their own people and their own work and their own money to do some sort of maintenance or correction. It's simply Acadia doing nothing more than just as if exercising their rights under the lease to remind Target of their...
So, for example, if Target agreed to keep the shrubbery looking good under the lease, Acadia would write and say, you ought to trim the shrubbery, it's looking pretty shabby.
Correct.
That's part of the policing function.
This insecurity or... You know, as policing as in security or cleaning
no,
up?
No, policing as in, making sure that the other party to the contract is doing what it's supposed to do.
Correct. I don't think that's any different than reminding them they're rent slate. They're not reasserting control over the property because you remind your tenant their rent is late or they forgot to
I just want to make sure that I understand correctly your legal position. And I gather it's that even though in the first two pages of the lease there was no formal demise of the ground underneath where the Target building sits, that the other 90 pages of the lease basically do surrender possession and control for every in every functional sense.
In every functional sense that, and especially any functional sense that has any relationship to the injury.
Okay, so your response to the other side is there was a surrender of possession and control.
There was a surrender of possession, and there was a surrender of control. There was nothing else Acadia could do absent turning over actual title. I mean, they weren't using it for any purpose. Target was. They weren't maintaining it. They weren't going to make any modifications to it. Target asserted their control. Acadia didn't even have the most basic authority to decide who was going to sweep up sand, salt, or plow the parking lot.
But just to be clear on that, Target was required to keep that parking area open to the public. So Target couldn't put a rail around it and say, this is only for our customers, nobody else can come in.
I think that's correct.
So what would happen under the lease? What's your understanding of what would happen if a Target customer rather than a Target employee sustained the same injury? What would Acadia's position be?
Acadia's position would be if it happened in the same location, that it's clearly within the Target primary parking area, it would be Target's responsibility. I don't think Target even agrees or disagrees with that assessment. Everyone, both parties to this lease agree Target is responsible for maintaining and controlling, insuring, and indemnifying for issues that happen in that parking lot.
So Target was required to have liability insurance. Does the record reflect whether Acadia was a named insured in that policy?
I'm not sure that that was ever identified anywhere in the record. It was never brought up that there wasn't any issues with any of that.
So that's the whole purpose. Well, that would be a separate issue, but that relates to the cross-claim in this appeal.
That would relate to the cross-claim, which is only there because the reason Target's motion was granted was because ours was granted, and there's no issue between Acadia and Target on that. It's really the underlying claim. Before I run out of time, I wanted to quickly go through some of the other articles of the lease. Most of them have been brought up already either by the trial court or in the briefs about the exclusive use and Target being the only one that can identify an employee parking area in there. Specifically in section 8.2B of article 8.2B, it specifically says tenants shall operate and maintain the improvements in the Target primary parking area. That is a little bit of a difference from what the trial court noted, where it indicated that the lease didn't specifically say who was to maintain it, although I think the trial court said maintain snow removal or something along those lines. But that article clearly indicates it's the tenant's responsibility to operate and maintain it. That same article 8.2A goes back to the definitions of the party sites, and it outlines each individual's responsibilities for maintaining their site. And as we saw earlier, the tenant site includes the parking lot. Any further issues about it were certainly re-clarified in the letters from Target or the letters to Target after Acadia was advised that Target wanted to change their snow removal company. Final note is that there was a little bit of argument in the briefs about the standard for control, whether it was actual or the power to exercise control. All the case law that's been cited all seems to indicate it has to be actual control, which makes sense because that's the purpose of that rule, is to get to the person that was actually controlling the area where this took place. In the Lewis Route 13 outlet case, that's a case where there was no lease whatsoever. It was an unwritten lease, I suppose, and that happened inside of a building, and that seemed to indicate that you have to have the in order to get that back to the landowner, and the landlord had to have control over that specific issue that caused the injury, which in that case was a stool. But I think overall there's no question under reading the entire lease that possession was given to Target of specifically the Target parking area, and that there's no evidence that any actual control was ever exerted by Acadia over that. The potential to do so as the landlord certainly should not be enough. Landlords can always have the right to reassert, even if it violates a lease agreement, to try to evict someone properly or improperly for whatever reason. So there's always an overriding general ability of a landowner to retake possession. In this case, they never did it, never took any actual control over the maintenance of it. And I would ask you to uphold the trial court's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Bruce Herron. May it please the court, Bruce Herron, I represent the third-party defendant below, Appellee Target Stores. The thrust of the plaintiff appellant's entire argument is the distinction she seeks to draw between the demise of the premises, the building itself, and the Target primary parking area. But for purposes of the issue before the court, the duty owed to the plaintiff by the landlord, there is no distinction, because the maintenance obligations and responsibilities that are specifically set forth in the lease are identical with respect to the building and the Target primary parking area. The obligations in both areas are placed squarely upon Target, so that the duty, there is no duty from the from Acadia to the plaintiff. The two of the cases that are cited by the appellant, I'd like to briefly address. One is the Foley case. And in that case, it was a slip and fall, as this one is, on ice and snow. And the court there let the jury decide the issue of control. The reason the court did that was that the court pointed to specific evidence that the landlord accepted some responsibility for maintenance and removal of snow and ice in the parking lot. Here we have the evidence is undisputed. There is no dispute of fact. All of the evidence indicates that Target accepted all of the responsibility for removal of snow and ice, and that Acadia accepted none of the responsibility for removal of the snow and ice. So there is no issue of fact like the court was presented with in the Foley case. The other case is the Argo case, which the plaintiff appellant relies on as well. That case involved a third-party management company retained by the landowner to perform snow and ice removal. Of course, we don't have that here. We have the specific undisputed snow and ice removal obligations in the lease itself. We don't have a third-party maintenance company. The plaintiff cannot, as she attempts to do, somehow lift this language out of the lease and call it a property management company, which she does in the brief. The other case, also cited by plaintiff, is also the facts are very similar. The Kovac case was Judge Babiar's case, and what the court found there again was that the landlord had no duty of care to a tenant's invitee who had slipped and fell on ice and snow. In that case, as in this case, maintenance, removal of ice and snow, was the sole duty of the tenant, the licensee. And for all those reasons, we Target also joins in asking the court to affirm the Superior Court's entry of summary judgment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few brief comments in rebuttal, Your Honors. I've heard today, as I've heard before, that Acadia did nothing to maintain this property. They did nothing to remove ice and snow from the property. But I would point out, it's our position that the fact that they did nothing shows that they were negligent, not that they had no duty to do so. Delaware law determines whether they had a duty to maintain the land. And if they had a duty, they've, in essence, taken the position that they've done nothing to meet that duty. And it will be very important at the trial, assuming the court agrees with plaintiff's position. I've also, again, heard, as I've heard many times, that this contract is a lease with respect to the Target primary parking area. It is not. The lease only pertains to the premises, and the definition of the premises and the function of the demise language in the lease specifically excluded the Target primary parking area. The lease also specifically says that Acadia continues to own the common area improvements. The Target primary parking area is part of the common area, and the improvements therein are owned by Acadia under the explicit terms of the lease. It's also important to note that the lease gives Target only a non-exclusive easement over these areas. Easements run against the possessors of land, and that shows that possession was not surrendered. And finally, I just have a few answers to the court's question. The record does not reflect whether Acadia was an additional insured. Prior to Target assuming the contract, Acadia maintained the entire town center, all of the common areas therein. And Acadia, or Target, as it had the right to do under the lease, said in August of 2003, I think it was, we will take that over and assume the responsibility. They were simply refunding their portion of the expenses that Acadia incurred in that endeavor. Just one more point that my opponents have argued repeatedly, that we have to show that Acadia's employees went into the Target primary parking area and exerted control. Delaware law is exactly the opposite. In note 45 of our reply brief, I cited numerous cases where the courts look to the contract to determine the issue of control and whether it can be determined as a matter of law as opposed to by a jury. Unless the court has any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The court will take the matter under advisement and take a brief recess.
Please rise.